Attention all toy photographers in the UK. Mark your calendars because Lizzie is going to be hosting the first official UK Toy Photographers Photo Safari in London from September 28th to 30th. We'll have official signups announced on the blog soon, but save the date because this is a meetup you're not going to want to miss. You're listening to the Toy Photographers Podcast, the official podcast of toyphotographers.com. I'm James Garcia, and on this show, I talk to photographers around the world who are turning Lego, action figures, miniatures, custom creations, and more into amazing works of art. On this week's show, I talk to Canadian Lego photographer Blake Powell, aka Boulevard Bricks. You may know Blake from his Deconstructed series, where he utilizes composition, symmetry, and some creative Lego piece placement to make really unique works of art. Blake and I talked a lot about his inspiration, why he loves Instagram, and how he's using that platform to reconnect with his followers in new and interesting ways, what it was like showing his work at the Brick Can Lego convention this spring, how he got his current day job because of toy photography, and so much more. I think you're really going to enjoy this conversation. I know I did. So without further ado, on with the show. How did you first get into photography?
How did I first get into photography was actually through toys, was how I first got into photography.
Oh, awesome. Usually it's the opposite for every other one of my guests. So
I didn't own a camera when I got into photography. I actually owned just an iPhone, and that's how I started. And I had always had a love for Lego, and I could never justify buying it, building it, and putting it on a shelf and it just sitting there collecting dust. Mm-hmm. So I never did. And I'm sure everyone knows there's the time period called the Dark Ages.
Yeah.
that was the main reason why I was in that time period, because I couldn't justify making the purchases. And I mean, as much as the imagination runs wild, I couldn't see myself running around any rooms, like imagining the ships were real and, you know, making the pew pew sounds and all that. So I didn't feel that there was a reason to have it other than enjoying the aesthetic. And then I actually, when Instagram kind of came and I was part of the Instagram community in a different way, I thought, hey, I could actually take photos of Lego and now post it on Instagram, and it wouldn't just have the whole sitting on the shelf aspect. I now could make it come alive in some way. And so that's how I started out. And I just literally was using a folded poster board and natural light. That's kind of how it started, but not the real origins. But that's kind of what the justification was to start doing photography.
That's awesome. How long ago was that now?
This must have been the end of 2013, I would say, like December 2013.
Okay, so let's talk about when you first started doing it. What was the first photograph you took? What was the first setup you did? And then how did you kind of evolve from there?
So the first setup I did was actually for, I think there's two things. There's one was on my own personal account. I bought a Lego architecture set of the Empire State Building. Hmm. And they were just those beige tan bricks. Mm-hmm. And it was just a monochrome. And I bought that, and that was the first thing. And I posted that on my my Boulevard Blake account, which was kind of what I was using as my music producer name at the time. And that's what I was kind of, my Instagram was really music oriented, with sort of like a lifestyle music, but it was really guided towards that music because my friend and I were kind of together doing some project within the city of Vancouver, Canada.
You've pretty much primarily stuck with Lego. Can you talk a little bit about that? Why you choose Lego so much and why you love Lego as your subject?
Yeah, I absolutely adore Lego because of the fact that it has so much nostalgia for me as a kid growing up. Mm-hmm. And the very first project I had when I really went into like, okay, let's do Lego and start photographing this was The Hobbit, those sets. So that was around the time when I started buying sets was the Lego. And I think Bag End was like the very first set I bought when I got back into
it. That's a good set.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites. It's one of the few that are not from the original when I got into it sets that aren't in my storage locker. They're actually, I keep it on display, that one always. And so I basically bought that one because I enjoyed the nostalgic aspect, and I embarked on a rather ambitious project, which you can still find today, but it's not growing and Instagram hasn't deleted it, even though it's not active. And it's an account called Started from the Shire.
I'm going to look that up right now.
Yes. And it was a shot for shot remake from the Hobbit movies done in Lego with full like comic strip with the dialogue written in comic bubbles.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
And it was really ambitious. And then with work and life, it got to a point where I could not pursue it at the level I wanted to. Mm-hmm. So rather than kind of, I noticed I was already cutting corners. So instead of continuing down that path of not doing things to its fullest, I decided to just kind of abandon it. And at the same time, I kind of branched off into Boulevard Bricks, because I realized that as much as I said to myself, oh, I'm only going to buy the Hobbit sets and Lord of the Rings, I'm not going to buy any other sets, that was just a fool's game. And I got caught into everything. And so I never bought Star Wars, actually. That was the last series of themes I got into, was Star Wars.
Interesting.
And now it's my primary series I purchased, because I was like, no, I'm going to stay away from that, because that just feels like a rabbit hole of money going out of my pocket and into Legos. And sure enough, that was the case.
Yeah, I know that feeling all too well, for sure. And yeah, I'm looking at this Starter from the Shire account right now. These photos are really, really cool. And you did that for a long time.
Yeah, it was very ambitious. And that was all done with just an iPhone. That was with an iPhone. And I think I was using Visco for a consistency, as well as a few other, like, it was quite labor intensive and all done on the phone. So it was shot on the phone, edited on the phone, added the dialogue in through the phone, all done that way, framing everything. And it just became like a Herculean task. And I realized I couldn't do the whole movie, but I really did enjoy it. And it was very niche at the time. And I noticed, like, as the Hobbit movies kind of started dying down, so did the interest in the account. There's a few diehards, but I mean, it didn't have the same appreciation, but people did like it. And that's how I started connecting with people within the Lego community, came from that. And it kind of transitioned as I got into Boulevard Bricks. People knew it was the same account. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is that it started from the Shire. And I don't know if you noticed the name, it says Bilbo Swaggins. Yeah. So this was back when I was producing music, and an artist I was working with, he would always come with different names, like random like celebrity names and things like that. And then he heard that I was doing this. And he was like, oh, man. And then there was the time the Drake song came out. So he's like, oh, started from the Shire and now you're here, huh? And he just like made fun of me for it. And then I was kind of like, And then so that's how that all started. But again, I had to abandon it, and I don't regret it, but I wish I could have seen it through and got it into a printed volume. And I think that would have been a cool thing. But I just realized that it was for the best to, you know, sometimes you got to let things go and evolve in another direction.
And the way you did evolve was you eventually started doing the Deconstructed series. Was that what you started doing right after when you did Boulevard Bricks, or was there something in between?
No, there was an in between where I was using the poster board, natural light, playing with shadows a lot. That was actually a big thing for me in my early days of Boulevard Bricks. I actually started creating a comic strip as the initial thing with my own Sig Fig to begin with. Mm. And then I realized, I think it was just like a comfort zone, because that's what I was doing in the Starter from the Shire, so it was an easy transition. And then it kind of got to where I started buying some of the Marvel sets and getting some of the Marvel figures and minifigures, because I had Hulk back then, which was a big one, and I had him like crushing coffee beans as like Hulk smashed coffee beans. And I put some write-up, because I was really into coffee at the time, about how you don't have the friction of a normal grinder like crushing the beans. By having Hulk smash them, there was no friction, so it preserved the taste. I did some weird write-up like that. I think I even put it on my normal account. And so I did a few things like that, and I did a black and white series using light and shadow, and again just with a poster board and natural sunlight. I would just have to find rooms in the house where the light was coming through at certain times of the day. Sometimes I do really early morning harsh light and then black and white, and it was a cool effect. And I kind of just experimented that way.
When you were doing your photos like that, was that just out of necessity, or was that a choice that you wanted to experiment with that kind of thing?
Well, at the time, my best friend, he has a blog that's pretty, or a Instagram account called When They Find Us, and it's pretty big. And that's kind of how I got into photography in a way, was seeing his style of shooting. And he was a bit of an inspiration and a guide with when I'm taking shots. He was one of the only people I let know in my group of friends that I created this, because there's a little part of me that was like ashamed that I was playing with toys as an adult. And that took actually a little bit to get over. And now I'm like super proud of it, and I tell anyone who will listen basically about it. But he was a big influence in helping me figure out things, and I would ask him advice, and he would like, you know, look at things and give me some feedback. And he was the one who let me know about using poster board, because he did some product photography and that's what he would use. And he just advised me like, hey man, just stick with natural light, because it's going to always do great for you. Turn off all other lights So then you only have one light source and you don't have this conflict of colors from lighting. And that was like, I would say the most valuable lesson I learned to start with was about having multiple light sources. And then when you go into the editing phase, how that can create some issues.
Yeah. What is a typical shoot for you? Like, do you do a lot of post-production or is it a lot of straight out of camera stuff?
For what I'm doing right now or just in my whole process over time?
Let's do both. Let's start with just your whole process and then we can jump into the deconstructed series.
So I don't do a ton of posts in terms of Photoshop and going in that way. I have, but it's not usually something, it's not my go-to. It's usually there was one point I was really into doing composites and putting in backgrounds and playing with the lighting and all that and watching tutorials and spending hours on it. And I realized that as fun as it was, I enjoyed the pureness of just shooting and then going into Lightroom or using Photoshop, but not in the sense where I'm really going in and manipulating. It's more just using it to accentuate what currently exists.
Mm-hmm.
So that's always been my way, is trying to find the lighting. There was a period of time when I was before deconstructed, but when I progressed and actually had a camera, where I started using a light box and I'd sometimes just use plain normal light, like a white light, to create how I wanted it. And then I would actually remove the light box and I started setting up multiple light sources, but in the dark. So those light sources were controlled and using colored lights, tissue paper over white lights to diffuse it, as well as create the color variant that I wanted from different angles, and playing with making your own sunset colors, but you're not doing it in post. It's all happening as you create the scene. And I do enjoy that. It's a lot of fun. And I'm still trying to figure ways to get back into that.
That's awesome. And like you said, there's something about doing those things practically and getting the shot in camera and then just having to do a little bit of tweaking in Lightroom or Photoshop. There's just something really awesome about doing that and really gratifying when you get that shot.
Oh, 100%. I sometimes will go aggressive with, I'll actually, I guess from a technical standpoint, I misuse the editing process, but I'm doing it for creative effect, where I'll really play with temperature sometimes just to achieve a night feel, or if I want it to be a little bit more warm. Sometimes now I'll play around with the split tones so I can adjust the highlight colors and the shadow colors. I use that very sparingly, but it's if I'm trying to create an otherworldly feel. That's probably the most post editing I'll do in terms of really altering the initial image.
And it's one of those things where once you know the rules, you can break them, right?
Yeah, 100%. I feel like it's kind of like I know what I want to achieve, the way it feels and the feeling, and I just do what needs to be done to get the feeling that I have that I want to create. And that kind of goes back to an ethos I had from my music days. There was this engineer, and I was watching all these YouTube videos by him, and his I can't remember his name right now, but I never forgot this phrase, and he said, "Don't make it sound good, make it feel good." And so I've always kind of kept that in mind with a lot of things that I do. Sometimes technicality and being really technical, you can lose something, because there's times when I've done this and I've been guilty of this, where I notice my shot isn't perfect when I go back. Like this one, I'm like, oh, this one isn't quite right. But even though this one is way more in focus in this area that I want, and this one, the focus is a little bit not quite in the area, the feeling of this one, it just feels right. So I'm going to go with it and just make it work. And I mean, it's not like I'm delivering for a client or anything like that. It's just on Instagram and the way I want it to feel, and it's right. And I think that's okay sometimes. You gotta let the emotion of a shot sometimes overrule a technical aspect, I feel. I think that's really important, and some people may overlook that. And I'm not really in any shape or form technically trained to use a camera. So I kind of operate on emotion and feeling, and I understand some things and ask people, but I feel that's important.
Before we get into your deconstructed series, I want to talk about Instagram a little bit, because that's where you're the most active photography-wise. What drives you to Instagram? And I know that earlier you're saying you're doing a lot of stuff on your phone. Again, is it just the convenience of it, or is there something about that platform specifically that really draws you in?
It's definitely because it's a visual first medium and platform. And like I said, the reason I got into shooting was because Instagram existed and I could post these new Lego sets that I was getting on there. That aspect is what made me enjoy Instagram. And I never really got into Facebook that much ever, even on a personal level. I rarely use it. I use it more as a communication tool rather than the social tool. It was to connect with people over Messenger who lived in different countries. Even sometimes through work, there were group chats that way. So I had to connect in that sense. And only recently I've started to utilize Facebook more in a social platform. And I have a page for my Boulevard Bricks. One was because I created a business account to look at some of the stats and see some of the metrics of what was happening and just kind of look at the way things are occurring on Instagram. I find that interesting. And I do have a social media background for my clients, so there's kind of the correlation there. But I'm enjoying Facebook now because, especially when I've gone full tilt with the deconstructed, I still have the feeling where I want to shoot some scenes and, you know, create what most people do on Instagram right now is recreating different scenes. I do enjoy doing that. So now I have a platform where I'll post that on there and then utilize my stories to say, hey, go check this out over here. But I really like it also because of the community. So it's not just a photographic thing, but there's the conversation that comes afterwards within the comments that I really enjoy. Like, that's my favorite part. And I live in the DMs. Like, I'm constantly, I have so many going at once, and I always encourage people to reach out. I will talk to anyone, give advice if they ask for it, or if they just want to have a conversation.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. And I've definitely noticed how active you are on Instagram. I mean, that's how we coordinated this conversation, was through Instagram DMs, and you're always commenting back on people's photos and replying to people's comments on your photos. And I think that's really awesome that you're so tied into that community on Instagram.
It became very important to me, I'd say, in the last 9 months, starting in about October last year, roughly. I kind of made this decision that I noticed I was just posting and putting no attention other than just putting my content out and then just expecting people to respond to it. And then I didn't need to be involved. And I kind of realized that was, for lack of a better term, a douchey way of going about it. And I decided to just become more involved and be a part of the community more, because I noticed I was lacking that.
Yeah, you know, they call it social media for a reason, you know.
And exactly.
The more I've noticed that about myself too, the more social I am, the more attention that brings. And not, you know, technically, I guess that's the case with the algorithm and all that stuff. But I think just personally, people like to see that you're a real person and that you're engaging and open to communication and stuff. I think that's awesome.
I definitely would have to say that the algorithm was what sparked my need to start doing that. And then there was, it's one of those things where by having that as the driving force of me starting, I realized, whoa, I'm getting a lot more out of this on an emotional level and how satisfying it is to be a part of this. And it just made me go even more into it.
And has that in turn affected your photography at all?
No.
No,
not really. It's affected me in the sense where I started looking for more ways to connect, and it affected the sense where, I don't know if you've seen, I have something called Boulevard on the Fly, and I do that through my stories where I go out and I do a little video of myself first. And that was one of the things I decided to put my face more on my Instagram, which I wasn't doing at all. I decided to like literally let myself be seen. And that was a big thing, because I had to get used to actually filming myself. Mm-hmm. One, two, looking like an idiot in public, holding my phone out in front of me and walking around and talking and just not being worried about that. And it's one of those things where you're going to be outside your comfort zone, but if you just keep doing it, you're going to get to a point where you're just numb to it and you don't care what other people are thinking. It's the same as when we all went out and started taking photos in the real world and people are wondering what you're doing on the ground, laying down, taking pictures of toys. There's that correlation. So that connection was, okay, I'm going to put myself out there through this way. And I realized that I was doing a lot of story work, just saying new post, where there was nothing original. It was just drawing people to what already existed. And I was trying to think of creative ways to utilize my stories without just announcing what you could find by going to my feed. And so I started creating this Boulevard on the Fly. I would talk about, hey, I'm in this place right now. So I brought this with me. I'm going to take a photo of it. Let's see what happens. And I would literally go shoot it. And then right afterwards, I would load it into my phone through Wi-Fi from my camera, edit it on my Lightroom mobile, and then post it right away. So there's usually about a 10 to 15 minute lag time between that first initial video going up and then the actual photo as a result. And sometimes it's not perfect, but I just decided this is something I'm going to try and achieve. And it's like, it's kind of utilizing your skills of trying to take a photo, achieve something just in the space you're in, and see what you can find with what's around you and create an interesting composition.
That gives me a jumping off point into this deconstructed series, because that's a very different approach, I would assume.
Yes.
Can you talk about the genesis of the deconstructed series and what that process is like?
Deconstructed started out as a result of my art background. So I was originally out of high school. I went to art school for graphic design, and I'd been doing illustrations and paintings and things of that nature since I was like 7 years old, all through high school and everything. And then when I went to college, I did a year of graphic design. And afterwards, I absolutely hated it. I hated art. I literally put down any form of artistic expression, and I think it was like 7 or 8 years before I started drawing or anything again. And I went into music. That was the transition from art in the graphic form into art in a music form. And so that was a transition there. But then that's when I started going back into it. I came back into the Lego thing, and then I realized, okay, I do enjoy the design aspect of things and the aesthetics of color and things like that. So I was doing my poster board, and I just had white poster boards. That was the original thing. And it actually came from doing client work where I was doing food styling for a few clients. And when I was doing the food styling, the way I was laying it out, I was like, this is really interesting. I was like, how would I translate the way this looks, this flat lay of food, into a toy aspect with Lego? And that's kind of where I was like, I can create symmetry with certain pieces, and the arms and joints come off and the head comes off. I was like, okay, let's try this. And it kind of just was experimentation, and it came about that way. And this was in 2014.
General aesthetic has stayed the same throughout the years, but eventually you added color. And one thing I love about your Instagram feed is that it seems to be really curated by color. So you'll have like 3 green posts in a row and then 3 blue posts in a row. And just looking at your feed, it makes it look really beautiful. How much planning and stuff like that does it take to do this series?
To be honest, I like to say I plan it extensively, but I don't. It's very much like done on the fly, so to speak. I do put some thought into it where I'll get ideas, like will hit me of something I want to do or the way I want to go about doing it. And I have a sketchbook where I write things down. I actually have a list of certain minifigures with colors that I think would work, because I'm trying to focus on using color theory, complementary colors. Sometimes I'll try and do a monochromatic theme, but it's not too far in advance planned. I do take requests from people wanting me to deconstruct a minifigure, and in that sense, I will plan. I'll say, okay, well, this minifigure, I want it to have this background. So then I'll plan ahead to have that come forth. But I kind of plan it around pop culture and different things that are happening that people are into in the moment, and mm-hmm. just capitalizing on the excitement that exists within the community and choose that. That's one thing. But it's really based on my colored backgrounds, because it goes in a rainbow pattern. Like that's the thing. So I follow the rainbow pattern every time, mm-hmm. and that's what makes me go through it. So I just kind of think about, okay, what's going to have what's going to pop the most within a complementary color of the background. And I think about the minifigure and things like that. And sometimes I don't follow that. I just try different things and experiment, but that's usually what goes behind it. I do have a sketchbook where I will plan certain things, like the way I want the pieces to be, and then I'll fit it into a background, and I'll actually do rough sketches and things like that if I need to.
And can you describe for people who may not have seen the Deconstructed series before?
So what the photos are is they're basically a flat lay. So the camera is set up with a tripod, and I have the tripod, so it's actually directly, like it's spread out over the canvas. So the legs are literally pyramided over the canvas or the colored background I'm going to be shooting. And then the camera goes, so the lens is pointing straight down at that. And then the back two legs are almost facing a wall. And I have a Geodox reflector, diffuser, all that. It's all in one. It has like a nice cover over it that I can use. So I just take off the cover, and it's a light diffuser. And I put my Loom Cube behind that, so the light comes through, single light source. And then on that is a minifigure that I have taken apart the joints of the arms. So there's the torso without the arms. Then there's the legs deconstructed from that, and then the head. And when I originally started out, I was using hair pieces separated, or different hair pieces in a helmet. And I've kind of evolved from that sometimes to using the hair and the head as one unit, or the helmet as well with the face inside instead of exposed. Depending on the look I'm going for. And then from there, I'll take Lego pieces to create symmetry, usually between the left and the right side. And I'll use different patterns, and I use the grid on the focus of the camera to check for alignment and the spacing between things. And I try and get it as accurate as possible, but I don't want it to be perfect. I want it to be near perfect, but I like the fact that there can be slight imperfections, because if I want it to be absolutely perfect, I could literally go in Photoshop and just duplicate things. So I think the fact that there's a lack of perfection at times adds something to the pieces.
Yeah, absolutely. You can tell it's done by hand, obviously, you know, and that there it does add character and personality to all of these shots. And I'm looking at your feed right now, and it's just, I find myself, I'll look at one picture and then just keep scrolling and scrolling and scrolling and scrolling, because they're all so different and so cool. Even if it's the same basic idea, you get really creative with some of the accessories you put in, some of the extra Lego pieces you add. It's really, really cool.
Oh, thank you, James. Appreciate that. The funny thing is my social media job that I have now came about from toy photography.
Yeah, let's talk about that. How did that happen?
So my friend who has When They Find Us, who is kind of behind the scenes guiding me into this endeavor, he was kind of like, hey, your Lego portraiture is actually really good. He's like, I think you would be good at doing actual food photography utilizing the same style. And I was like, okay. And so he's like, okay, well, I have this one client, the billings that they want to have and the budget is kind of way below what I want, but if you're willing to take this, I can give you this client and you just give me a cut of it and I'll help manage the kind of the back end stuff. And I was like, okay. So I just kind of started shooting food that way, and I had a lot of free reign. He was a German sausage maker, and he did lots of charcuterie, so there's a lot of styling involved. And then it led to me also getting this account afterwards for this company called Meat and Bread. They're in Seattle. You may have heard of them before. They're kind of a big sandwich company. And yeah, I just basically got to do food styling and shoot. And I was literally using my iPhone doing photography for them. And then when I started getting paid from that, I realized, okay, it's time to invest into a camera. And that's how it all started. But it literally all started. Now my job that I have, my main source of income, comes from doing social media and taking photos of food and posting on social media. And that all came from literally taking pictures of Lego and spending time. And, you know, like I said, I'm taking photos every day, and that just developed the ability to have an eye for that visual composition, and it translated into other elements.
That's awesome. And it just shows too, you know, I'm sure that your use of Instagram and knowing that platform has really helped with your job too, just like using those social media platforms for yourself. I do social media marketing as well, and just people are always impressed, like, oh, you know how to use all of these? It's like, well, yeah, I have to for my photography.
Yeah, exactly. It did have a nice easy transition, and it actually went both ways for me. I started learning stuff, doing stuff for clients that ended up helping in the Instagram side of things for my personal toy stuff. And then as things went, I started realizing, oh, look at this direct message line of work more recently. It's like, this is really great. So then that started translating, reaching out more through direct messages to people out there. So it all kind of works together and feeds off one another, being involved with it in different aspects.
And, you know, I think the dream for a lot of people is that they want to do toy photography for a living or make money off of it or something. And this is an indirect way, I guess, to do that.
It is 100%. I totally agree with you. And yes, that is also one of my dreams as well, trying to figure out how to make that work.
So you just showed your work at a Brick Can for the very first time, and you were the only photographer there, I think you said, right?
Yes, I was. It was a new endeavor for them, and they took a risk with me.
Cool. So can you talk about how that opportunity came about and how that went?
So how that came about was, earlier in the year, someone actually reached out to me through direct message, and they said, are you going to Brick Can? And I said, what's that? And then that's kind of how it all started. And I was like, what? This is at the River Rock? And this has been going on for 3 years? I literally live 15 minutes from here, and I had no idea this existed. And I was like, I have to be a part of this. So originally I thought I could sell prints was the thing. And then I reached out to John Langrish, who's the actual organizer for it. And I didn't realize this when I was speaking to him. I thought he was just part of the team. And I spoke to him, and then he, through email, and then he actually said, let's talk on the phone since you're local. And we started chatting, and we had, like, I think an hour long conversation the first time we got on the phone. And he was just telling me how he thinks it would be cool, and he wants to have photography. And then he explained to me how selling prints wouldn't work based on, because their vendors are all built up. And I was like, you know what, that's fine. And he explained to me also about how it's a whole convention where there's fun activities. And he's like, if you've never been to one before, which was the case for me, you're going to want to participate in these, and being a vendor, that's going to conflict with your ability to do that. And I thought, okay, let's just showcase. I've never done it. And one of my goals this year was to exhibit my work in some way. So I was like, that's my main goal this year, not to actually sell the prints. So I just went with that route, and it was fantastic. I absolutely loved it. The setup was challenging in the sense that they didn't have any sort of, they were all tables is all they had. So there was no actual wall or anywhere where it was mounted properly. So I had to get little easels, like art, not art easels, but they were display easels for pictures and photographs. And then I did everything foam core mounted, so it was firm. And then just, I displayed them all that way. And I had 14 pieces.
Yeah, that's kind of how it is at Bricks Cascade too, just on tables. And then everybody brings their own easels, or some people build easels out of Lego, which is pretty cool.
Yes. That's definitely, I was speaking to some people, and that's definitely, actually I was speaking to Janelle's mom about that. And she was the one who was talking about the way she does some stuff like that. And I thought, oh, that's really cool. And I'm like, okay, next year I got to figure out how to plan to incorporate more Lego as part of the photography element.
Yeah, that's cool. How was the photography received at the convention? Since you were the only person, was it daunting to be the only one there, or was the reception really good?
The interesting thing was that the AFOLs themselves weren't as interested as I thought, and I guess John thought, but in terms of the whole, within the context of the exhibit, it was very well received. And the way I had it done was, it was kind of unique from what everything else that was going on. And I did a last minute sort of idea based on what I was seeing after the first 2 days. And before the exhibit went live, I actually created in a wooden canvas. Instead of using the canvas side, I flipped it upside down, so it had like a pocket. And within that, I created an actual deconstructed piece that was on display without having the light. So I decided to do that to show what it actually looked like in a non-photography form. And that's kind of led to a whole nother set of ideas for next year, how I'm going to display some things, maybe not totally in a photographic element, but create some actual live pieces of deconstructed works that you can see there. So that's kind of, that was the great thing about it, is it provided inspiration for how to evolve the process in the real world outside of Instagram, which I thought was really cool. But there was a good reception, and I got to actually talk with someone from Lego, a rep there, and he told me he'd never seen anything like what I was doing, which was really cool and a nice validation for the whole project.
Yeah, I bet. That's awesome. And just the live deconstructed piece in person, that's something I wouldn't have thought of, but that's a really cool idea.
Yeah, it was really fun. It was really last minute, and I was like, okay, let's make this work. And I actually used the brick can torso that we were given to put on display, because I thought that'd be a cool way of showcasing it. And we all got little Ziploc bags full of loose pieces that were, it was called the trade bag, so that there were different times when you could trade certain pieces with other AFOLs to get something you're looking for a build. And actually just used what I had in there. I kind of was like, okay, what do we have here? How can I make this work? So I try sometimes to set challenges for creating a deconstructed. So, and that was one of the ways I did that for this.
What are some of the other challenges that you've challenged yourself with?
So sometimes what I'll do is, for smaller sets, I'll only use what's available in that. So I actually love the dimensions sets, because there, you get a minifigure, there's a few pieces with it. I guess it's not that much of an investment, especially when I'm very minifigure based compared to sets. Like, I do love building sets because it has that calming meditative feel for me at the end of the day. But sometimes I'm not utilizing the set in its entirety afterwards as a result, because of the nature of the process I'm doing. So I really enjoyed dimensions for that. So one day I decided to just, I think the first one I did was with the Mr. T. I used that one, and I only used pieces that came from that set to create it. And it was fun. And it's all color, and it makes sense because the color pattern is there. So it worked out really well.
You mentioned that, you know, you started with doing the Hobbit stuff. You eventually got Marvel, and then very recently Star Wars. Are those the franchises that draw you in the most, or your biggest forms of inspiration? What goes into how you choose your subjects?
There's no real actual, I find that I'm Star Wars heavy, because I now own the most Star Wars after, I think, like, I to be honest, the Star Wars, when I said I held off, it was like for a year, and then I got into it. So I still have been, the majority of my time with Lego has been in the Star Wars realm. But I basically, it all has to do with looking at minifigures, the color palette that they provide with the backgrounds that I have, or if I just think of a cool way to showcase a particular minifigure, that will go to it in terms of deciding. But my biggest forms of inspiration is pop culture itself. I love actually when I build sets themselves, I will watch movies related to it. So I'll watch like the whole Marvel series right now, and I've been building the Avengers Infinity War sets. I like to have those in the background. Or if I'm doing Star Wars sets, I'll put on a Star Wars movie. Like I like to be fully immersed within that theme when I do builds most of the time.
That's awesome.
That's the pop culture side. In terms of other artists, the biggest inspiration for especially how Deconstructed is today is from Alex Solis. He's an illustrator. He goes by AlexMDC on Instagram. And his stuff is phenomenal. He is a great illustrator, and he does a series called Icons Unmasked. And what he does is if you haven't seen it, you have to check it out. His stuff is so cool, and he's a very talented illustrator. He even creates like his own polystone art figures, which I've bought a few of. I have, I think, most of his art books to reference as inspiration when I need it. And I've even got the chance to like connect with him, and we've talked, and he gave me some advice before I did my first show, which was really awesome, and where he thinks he would like Deconstructed to go. And he said it'd be cool if I did a 500 piece Deconstructed shot, which I am going to do. My main issue with that is finding something big enough and getting far enough away to capture it. So that is in the works for the future.
How many pieces, I know it changes from photo to photo, but how average, how many pieces do you usually go into one photo?
I would say it can range from anywhere from like 20, between 10 and 20, but I don't think I've ever done more than 50, and I feel like I'm being ambitious estimating that number.
Maybe build up to 500, to like
100
first.
I'm gonna work onto it. Yeah, it's definitely figuring out a way to make it work, because a big part for me is in the compositions, I realize, is the negative space of the color framing it, so that would be limited doing it that way. Someone else who's probably like my favorite artist is Takeshi Murakami. I don't know if you're familiar with him. He's created Superflat, and he has a really, really cool Japanese artist. And he does, you may know him most commonly for doing the album artwork for Kanye West's Graduation album.
Oh, okay.
So he drew that, and he created the Kanye bear as well. And I was lucky enough, he actually had an exhibit in Vancouver that just ended at the beginning of May. So I went like three times and saw all this stuff, and I was like in awe the whole time I was getting to view this stuff and getting so much inspiration. Those definitely are the biggest ones. The other artists, I like illustrators, and I follow a lot of artists, and I try and connect with them as much as I can. And I'm big on, I actually buy a lot of art prints and stuff like that from other artists that I really like, because I would like to have prints, and I feel like I want to support them because that's what I would like. Other people who feel inspired by anything that I'm doing, or vice versa, things like that, just that connectivity. Mm-hmm. So that's a big deal for me. But it's hard to find other Lego photographers and toy photographers, because not a lot of people do it in the same style I am. One person I actually completely forgot to mention is this artist who's no longer on Instagram, and I'm so sad because his stuff was like, I hounded him to get prints, and it never came to fruition. But his name was Bobby P. Mula. I don't know if you ever followed him, but his stuff is phenomenal, and you'll see like a big inspiration for the plain backgrounds, and there's a curated sense of designing the way things are together. You can see the inspiration. I can't believe I forgot to mention him. He was a big part of things becoming the way they are on my Instagram. Like I even think he might have been like one of the original inspirations for Deconstructed, but he hasn't, I forget sometimes because he hasn't been on Instagram, I think, for over a year now.
Yeah, that's disappointing when you really follow somebody religiously and are really inspired by their work, and then they disappear or stop doing what they're doing or delete their account for whatever reason. It's like, no.
Yeah.
So I've been in that boat before too with some other Lego photographers and stuff.
But I still get a lot of inspiration from the community as a whole when I go out and take photos and I want to create my scenic stuff, and I see how people do things, especially when people have creative ways of displaying the Lego limbs. So they're not in their standard static movement. They take it out of the socket, figure a way to MacGyver it into a different position. Mm-hmm. I know Rob 787, I believe is his handle. He does a really cool way of doing that. I find his stuff just phenomenal. And we connect and talk a lot.
Now that you have shown your work, and that was your big goal for 2018, what's next for you this year? What's your next goal?
So my next is, I happen to have a really good friend who has a a art degree. So he understands a lot of the technical aspect of art, and he works in a gallery. So my next is I actually want to figure a way to create deconstructed in a different artistic sense and not just have it as a print. So you actually have a physical piece. So I'm just working with him and coming up with some ideas, and I will be creating one-off pieces, or like depending on the accessibility of minifigures, like maybe only 5 exist, period. But a lot of them are just going to be, this is the only one done like this. And I'm just trying to figure out the way to create that, because he mentioned my original way of gluing it would not work because the archival quality he explained, which is, for anyone who doesn't know, is I guess the way it lasts over time.
Mm-hmm.
The glue would degrade, the pieces would fall off. And so if you're trying to sell something as a premium art piece, it's not going to last over time. So we're right now just working with just brainstorming some logistics of where to take that to create actual pieces. And he's awesome because he wants to be involved in the process, and he really finds what I'm doing interesting. So it's great to have someone on your team like that to help develop your idea into another form.
Yeah, absolutely. And somebody that's in that art world too and can shed some light on some of those issues that maybe you wouldn't have thought about. Like, I would have never thought about the longevity of glue on pieces, you know?
Yeah, it never even crossed my mind. He was just like, well, that's a great idea, but what about this? And then he mentioned to me, and I was like, first thing I said is, what is archival quality? That's the first question I asked.
Yeah. And you have your own podcast too, which is cool. Let's dive into that a little bit. What was the idea behind that, and how is that going?
I'm not getting to do it as much as I would like. I'm having trouble finding the time to be secluded to actually record it. Mm. But I use it in a very much, it's kind of just a way to connect with people in a non-visual form. So I do have an audio background. I moonlighted as a recording artist at one point, creating my own music and doing that whole recording process. So I feel very comfortable talking and doing that form of communication,
mm-hmm.
as well as I work also in evenings in a restaurant. So I'm constantly engaging with people in a conversational way. So I just like the ease of communication with it. So it's a different way to convey thoughts about what's happening. Writing out, it takes a lot of time for me, just creating a voice method of conversation or communication. I find it really easy. And I actually use the Anchor app. It's so easy to use, and I just do it all on my phone, and it's nothing fancy. It's just literally a form of communication. I just started doing it and experimenting, and then I found they put it out on all the podcast platforms for you.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's really easy to use. And then I ended up finding out that some people were sending me messages saying, oh, hey, I checked out your podcast. I really like it. I find I listen to it when I'm going to work and stuff like that, and I really enjoy it. And I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. And I'm not getting a ton of listens on it, as far as I can tell. It seems to be, I don't know if it shows me the stats outside of the Anchor platform, how it's being viewed, or if those are accurate for how it is through all. But I mean, I'm not doing more than 20 listeners, but the fact that people are reaching out afterwards and having a conversation about it means that I still find value in that, because you don't always need to have a mass following for it to mean something. As long as there's one person who's connecting with it, I feel that there's still value in doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like it's easy to get discouraged in today's social media world where, oh, this photo only got 20 likes, or this podcast only got a couple listens or whatever. But as long as you're doing it for yourself first and happy with what you're putting out, and just happy that, you know, at least one person is out there seeing it, or a group of people, I think that it can actually be really encouraging.
I completely agree. Yeah, I feel that way too. I sometimes, even with photos, I'll be like, wow, the likes aren't as much as I thought with this one. But then the comments are on par with how it normally is. And I'm like, okay, I like that, because I'm more about the conversation. And you know what? I'm creating content. It's not like we're creating on Instagram a post a month or something like that. We have quite a high volume of what we're doing. So in the pure sense of doing that, there's going to be times when things don't resonate the same way. Sometimes they emotionally do with you as they will with the public. And I discovered with art that there's nothing wrong with that. And you just have to accept that you may really like something, but they don't. And it could be maybe the process, you have an emotional attachment to that people can't see and you're not even recognizing within the situation. And it's not a big deal. That you should never take down something that you like, oh, this didn't do well, I'm going to take it down. You should always just allow it to speak for itself and see how things evolve over time. And you may notice there's a reason later on as you create other shots and things like that.
To wrap up, you've given a lot of good insight already throughout this talk, and I appreciate that. But do you have any advice you could give for people that are just starting out either on Instagram or in photography or in toy photography?
100%. My advice would be is do what you love. That's what I would definitely say. It's just do something that you love and don't get caught up on your equipment, because at the end of the day, the shots you're creating, especially when you're just starting out and you're not sure, like buying any camera equipment is a serious investment. And I would almost say if you're looking to just get a camera and your phone is doing the job for you, I would hold off on trying to get a cheap camera and maybe wait a little bit longer and invest in a bigger one or a more high quality camera with a little bit more oomph to it, because the chances of you constantly buying cameras is not that high. You're most likely just going to have one that's a quality camera and you're going to stick with it. So if you know the time frame you have of saving up, wait longer and just stick it out with your mobile device if that's what you're using, or someone else's borrowed camera, and get one later on that's got nice quality to it, and you can get a good lens if that's what you need. But a lot of the times you can achieve what you need with just how it comes, because at the end of the day, it's the composition that is going to speak louder than the actual quality of the photo. Because a nice photo is a nice photo, but you can have a nice photo that's a boring composition, and the fact that it's a nice photo in terms of the quality of it doesn't matter if it's a boring composition.
Yeah.
So your composition should trump everything else.
Yeah, I believe that. And clearly, based on your photography, you love good compositions because yours are always so great. So.
Well, thank you, James. That's just something that is the design side of it. But sometimes, you know, they don't work out that way. When I look back, and that's the other great thing about Instagram is if you have a chance of actually seeing your progression and growth. And that's the best thing for new photographers is if you're new at this, especially like just new in terms of taking photos, take tons, post all the time, post one shot every day. Doing more than one a day can, especially when you're new, some people can find that a little bit spammy. That's my only caveat, but doing one a day is definitely acceptable. And I would highly recommend just going out and shooting and experimenting. Don't even worry if it doesn't look great. Just start doing it, because photography and any art form is going to progress by experience. So the more you're doing it, the more you're going to progress, and you'll get to look back and see that. And I mean, especially on something like Instagram, you have the ability to archive old photos, so you can actually get rid of your older stuff. And so your feed just looks like the newer things that you really want to showcase. And then you can have that as a means of looking back and seeing how things are going in terms of you as an artist progressing.
And then I guess finally, where could people find you online? What's your Instagram handle? How can people get your podcast, all that stuff?
So actually, you can find me all the same way. It's Boulevard Bricks. That's BLVD Bricks, the abbreviation for Boulevard. And everything is through that. So if you type in any podcast, Boulevard Bricks, it'll come up. It says Boulevard Bricks Toy Talk. My Facebook is the same. My Twitter is the same. And my Instagram, I got the same handle for everything, luckily. And I'm definitely the most active on Instagram. If you want to see my shots that are not related to the deconstructed, I do those on my Facebook as well, as I'm doing some non-color coordinated deconstructed pieces are going to start showing up on my Facebook more. And I don't really use Twitter, to be honest. Twitter is something I kind of just have, but I don't really like that platform as much. So it's mainly Facebook, and then the podcast. You can find that on, I believe it's the Apple Podcasts have it, Shopify has it. Pretty much any of them, as far as I understand, you can find it there. And I also end up adding that onto my Facebook page as well. So the Facebook is a good way of finding everything that's kind of beside the deconstructed works. And on my Instagram, I do every Saturday, sometimes Sunday, but usually every Saturday at 10 a.m. Pacific time, I do a live story and just talk about what's going on with the week. I focus on showcasing some artists that I found and accounts that I think are interesting, and then I just talk about things like that.
Yeah, I love that. I tuned into that one yesterday. I didn't realize that you'd been doing those. And I think that's really cool. And again, just shows how much you like to give back to the community and communicate with people.
Yeah, that was another side of trying to put myself out there more and doing it in the live format. That was really hard to do. And I had friends tuning into that, and they were like, the first time I did it, they were like, who are you? Like, that's not how you sound or talk at all. Like, why are you talking like that? And I was like, I understand. I know. I just got to get comfortable. And I realize that. So I just got to keep doing it. And I know it'll get better.
Thank you so much for listening. You can find new episodes of this podcast and daily articles on creativity and toy photography on our website, toyphotographers.com. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. We also ask that you please leave us a 5-star review. That'll help spread the word about the show and help us get noticed. You can find us on Facebook at Toy Photographers and on Instagram at _toyphotographers_. Music for this week's episode is courtesy of freemusicarchive.org. And finally, you can reach out to us with comments, concerns, recommendations, etc. at toyphotographypod@gmail.com. I'm James Garcia. You can find my work every single week at toyphotographers.com, as well as on Twitter at TheRealJames, real spelled R-E-E-L, on Instagram at TheRealJames23, and on my website, TheRealJames.com. Thanks so much for listening. I'll see you guys next week.